Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
It's Monday evening. It is that time. I apologize. It's the second time I've hit the airwaves today on Talk Radio Europe, but there you go. Hopefully you'll stay with me until 7 o'clock. Right now it is the Irish programme live on air. Hard to believe, isn't it? 7th of October, but here we are. Patricia Traynor will be joining us this evening to talk to us about place names. People often ask, you know, why is something called Bally this or Kill that or whatever the case might be in Ireland, like Kildare or Kilkenny or Bally James Duff. Well, Patricia will be telling you, and she will also be telling us a story that goes back to the 8th century in Ireland, featuring Cú Chulainn and Bicrú. Ben will be joining us to talk to us about comedy, and he'll be playing a nice comedy piece for us. I think you will approve, and I know that you will know exactly who we're featuring today. I like to feature an Irish comedian with some Irish comedy on a regular basis on the programme anyway. I'll be playing the number one song from this very day, the 7th of October, 1988 in Ireland, the Irish number one from that day. The G2 Summit, why do we call it that? Well, my name is Ger. George Lee joins me, so the two G's, Ger and George, and we call it the G2 Summit. We'll be chatting about the stories that made the headlines in Ireland over the past 7 days, and of course there'll be plenty of other good music in there as well. In fact, most of it will be coming from our birthday file. And who is on the birthday file this week? Well, today, the 7th of October, is Cian Healy's birthday. Cian is a Leinster and Ireland rugby player former. 1987, he was born in Dublin. Micheál O'Donnell was a singer, songwriter, composer, guitarist, very influential in the traditional Irish music scene. He was born in Kells in 1952, but unfortunately, he is no longer with us. And a man by the name of Thomas Kennelly, the Irish-Australian author of Schindler's List. It was called Schindler's Ark, wasn't it, when he wrote it first? But anyway, it became Schindler's List. He was born on this day in 1935. Tomorrow, the 8th of October, Gavin Friday, the musician and singer, was born in Dublin in 1959. Tony Ward, the Munster, Leinster and Irish rugby player of old, he was born in Dublin in 1954. And Ardal O'Hanlon, you know Ardal, he's a stand-up comedian, he's an actor, he was Father Dougal in the Father Ted series. Well, he was born in Carrickmacross in 1965. Tomorrow is his birthday. Wednesday, the 9th of October, Nicky Byrne, singer with, was it Boyzone or Westlife? I can't remember. Anyway, he was a singer and he is now working with 2FM, isn't he, in Dublin, in Ireland. He was born on the 9th of October, 1978. And Ronan Collins, broadcaster, has been with RTE for many, many, many years. Terrific broadcaster he is as well. He was born on that day in 1952. Thursday is the 10th of October. Una Healy, formerly of the Saturdays, or is she still with them? I know she's got a solo career, but I'm not sure if she's still singing with the Saturdays or not. She was born in Thurles in County Tipperary in 1981. And Roy Keane, no need to tell you who that is, he was born in Cork in 1971. Friday is the 11th of October, and Anne Enright, the writer, was born in Dublin on that day in 1962. And Joe Canning, the wonderful Galway hurler, was born in Portumna in 1988. Saturday is the 12th of October, and Christy Ring was born in Cloyne in Cork in 1921. Christy Ring, one of the finest hurlers ever in Ireland. And Brendan Boyer from the Royal Showband. Brendan was born in Waterford on that day in 1938. I don't have any birthdays for you for next Sunday. So there we go. There's our birthday file for the coming week. Let's go back, shall we, to one of the musical birthdays. Una Healy. She celebrates her birthday on Thursday. She was born in 1981. And here she is with a song called Strangers.
Tell me, did I ever really get to know you? Did you really care for me like you're supposed to? Oh, did you? Empty, every word you said to me was empty. Broken every promise that you made me. No, we can't save this. After all the memories and everything we had, even after all these years, we're back where we began. I guess everything I gave was not enough. gave you my whole heart, but tell me, was it love for you? I will not regret, I gave my all. Strangers went away, now strangers at the end. You told me I was yours and you were mine solely. Never wanted to believe all those stories, yeah, that they told me. Crazy, you made me feel like I was going crazy, believing all those lies that you fed me. No, I wasn't crazy. So save your breath, there's nothing left we're keeping anyway. We are so much better off to go our separate ways. I guess everything I gave was not enough. I gave you my whole heart, but tell me, was it love for you? I will not regret, I gave my all. Strangers went away, man. No strangers at the end. Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, yeah, yeah. I guess everything not enough. Ooh, I gave you my whole heart, but tell me, was it love for you? I will not regret, I gave my all. Strangers went away, man. Now strangers at the end. Strangers went.
That's Una Healy and a song called Strangers, because she celebrates her birthday on Thursday. We wish her a happy birthday in advance. I'll take a quick break right now. Come back to me just after that. And Ben will be here to introduce some comedy.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Welcome back to the programme. As you know, we started a comedy feature. I like to try and feature some of the Irish comedians, and there are plenty of them out there. Sometimes everyone's a comedian, but we're talking about the established ones. And indeed, as I said before, if there's somebody you think you would like to hear or we should feature on the programme, do please let me know. However, you have voted in your thousands that Ben does a much better job than I do in introducing it. So he's on the line again. My son, Ben Sweeney, who is a producer with Tip FM in County Tipperary in Ireland. Ben, good to talk to you as always.
Hello, Ger. How are you?
I'm in top form, I'm glad to say. Enjoying the sunshine in Spain. It's really nice. Really nice. How is it in Clonmel?
I won't tell you what I'm looking at out the window, but it's much darker and much wetter than I'd say you have the view out of your platinum studio over there in sunny Spain.
Platinum studio is right. Right. Funny man, what have we got today?
We have a man by the name of Brendan O'Carroll.
It's brilliant.
Funny that you should say in your introduction about how everyone's a comedian, because again, I know we've spoken about Dublin comedians before, but the people of Dublin just have this fantastic wit about them. If you listen to tourists coming to Ireland, they always pick up on it. It's just very dry sense of humour.
Yeah.
And Brendan O'Carroll just encapsulates that entirely. He's a man that people will probably know more of, or his TV show Mrs. Brown's Boys. Now,
yeah.
He dresses up as an Irish mammy. There's this whole phenomenon about the Irish mammy, but he dresses up as, well, really a grandmother now at this stage,
I suppose.
And yeah, and it's a BBC sitcom. It's co-produced by RT, but it's something that Brendan O'Carroll has been bringing since, I think, the early 90s. He started doing radio pieces with it, so he's become iconically tied into this role of Mrs. Brown. But as well as that, he's also been doing stand-up and other pieces. He's an author as well. But as it's stand-up that we tend to be giving a bit of a mention to, we said we'd bring you some of his stand-up comedy today. So here's a bit of that.
It's great to be back in Dublin. And I say back in Dublin because... not because I haven't moved. Now, Pat Kenny did that on the Late Late Show. They rang me and asked me to do the Late Late Show last year, whatever date it was. They said, let's say the 5th of December. And I said, yeah, oh, wait a minute, hold on. I think I'm away on holidays. No, I'm back on the 4th. I'm in Florida up till the 4th, but I'm back. Oh, great. So tonight the Late Late Show comes along and the plank, Pat. He is, though. He's a plank, isn't he? He is. Now, listen. He's a nice guy. He's a lovely guy. But he's a plank. But they asked me, so tonight the Late Late Show, Pat goes, ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome all the way from his home in Florida? I got a bus in from Fingless. I'm sitting there thinking, I thought I was next. Brendan O'Carroll. So if you watch that Late Late Show back, you'll see me walking out like that. So, of course, I live in Dublin. So no matter how many times you tell people, they go, they don't care. It goes over them, you know? You meet people, you know, a week later, they go, fair play, you're moving to Florida. No, no, that was a mistake. I don't live in Florida. You're right too. No, I don't live in Florida. I live in just out in Blanchardstown. All right, yeah, fair play to you. I would too if I could get out to the sunshine, you know? But I have been away, and all that 6 years since I did the Olympia Theatre. I'll tell you something, we've had houses like this every single night. Every single night. It's been absolutely fun. If I'd known there was going to be this big a crowd, I'd have done the point and f*** the Olympia. What are they going to do, f*** me out? I'm kidding, I'm f***ing kidding. You see the bouncers here, did you? Wouldn't put a f***ing butt out. No, real. No, they're real bouncers. Real bouncers. Do you know? See, bouncers, we've all done it. When we get a few gaggles on us, we go and we, you know, attack the bouncer. You know, and then we're all locked and we go, come on, we go to the nightclub. You know you've no chance of getting in, you know? And there's always one. Now here, lads, hold on a second now. See when we get up here to the door. To the door. Let me do the talking. And we all try and get in with that deep breath, you know? How are you? But if you ask you a question, you're you know, you go, how are you? Where are you going? Oh, for they've got strict rules about in Dublin, especially. Do you all remember white socks? No white socks. See that? White socks. Another rule is no leather. Neat dress essential. Well, start with the no leather. There's no point in arguing with a bouncer. They're programmed no let off. You can tell them 10, 15,000 things. You walk up the door, they go, here, pal, no let off. Like, this costs more than your car, pal. No let off. You're blocking the door. Don't argue, you're wasting your time. If you want to really confuse them, ask them a question. That f***s them up. They're not programmed for questions. You walk up to the door, he goes, hey, no let off. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. Leather what? Ando, I fell at the door here. I fell at the door. Neat dress essential, there's another one. What the f*** is neat dress nowadays? My son goes out and he buys a pair of jeans that are ripped to f***, bleached, stained, frayed, and pays 90 euro for them. If I went home with jeans like that, me ma'd kill me. Neat dress always applies. But you know what? Do you know who was a neat dresser? Would have got into any nightclub in Dublin. Adolf Hitler. Oh, it's the story, Al. Oh, looking good. Adolf, come on, you're out. Look at the crease in his trousers, man. Yeah, Jesus. No way. No sandals, pal. I don't care who your father is, no.
there's Brendan O'Carroll there, as you heard. A lot of editing went into that, a lot of beeps. He doesn't hold back anyways when it comes to language on stage, but that's Brendan O'Carroll in his true form.
Now, what you didn't say, Ben, was that it was my poor father who had to do all that editing, but that's okay.
Well, you know, if you're paying me so little, I said I'd leave you to the editing of the kit. So I just come up and do a phone call every Monday evening.
I don't know what this so little business is and paying me. I mean, anyway, we'll have a chat about that at Christmas time again.
The next time we see you, indeed. But that's Brendan O'Carroll anyways.
All right. Well, listen, thanks a million, Ben. And look forward to whatever you bring to us at a later date.
All right. Talk soon.
And don't forget that if you would like to hear somebody, you can certainly email me, Ger, G-E-R, at TRE.radio. And you'd never know, we could be featuring your favourite Irish comedian very shortly. That's a haunting piece of music, but it's nice, isn't it? It comes from Gavin Friday. That's a song that's called Angel, and we play that because Gavin celebrates his birthday tomorrow, Tuesday, the 8th of October. He was born on that day in 1959. I am going to take another quick break, come back to me just after that, and I will introduce the little piece that we have today from Patricia Traynor.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Every so often we have little stories and anecdotes and bits of information from Patricia Traynor about old Ireland, very old Ireland sometimes, and today is one of those ones because she's going to talk to us about place names, how places get their names and so on, but she'll introduce this herself in just a moment. But she's then going to talk to us about two great characters in Irish folklore and a story that brings us back to the 8th century, and I hope you enjoy it because it was copied down through the years, and Patricia will tell you more about that. Those two characters I'm talking about, Cú Chulainn and Brickrew. So, over to Patricia Traynor.
Well, hello again. We're going to talk about place names, or rather Irish place names, which have always been something of a mystery for the English. Brian Friel wrote a great play called Translations, where an English soldier had to draw up an ordnance survey map of an area in Ireland, and the problems that he encountered trying to anglicise the Irish place names. Most times, he simply wrote down an approximation of what he heard. For example, Drimdu, which means black shoulder in Irish, becomes Drumduff in English. And Pol na Gairach, meaning hole of the sheep in Irish, becomes Pool Kerry. Or, for instance, Dira becomes Derry. We know that Derry means an oak grove. And Nure becomes Newry, the ewe. Ardwacha becomes Armagh. And of course, we know that all the place names that begin with Bally mean Balia, town. So we have Ballymena, the middle town, Ballymoney, the peat town, Ballycastle, the town of the castle, Ballyhornan, Hornan's town, and even actually in the United States, you've got Baltimore. Baltimore really is Balia and Timor, meaning the town of the big house. As children, we used to say, if you weren't so Ballymena with your Bally money, you could have a Bally castle for a Bally home. All of those are places in Northern Ireland. It's also interesting to discover the reason for a place name, and sometimes it's not just a question of translation. For example, Dublin, like Dú meaning black and Linn meaning pull. So just imagine, if we were to translate Dublin, we would get Blackpool. Instead, we have Ballyachachlia, the town of the ford of the hurdles, or Hurdleford town. Towns which begin with Kill, like Kilkenny, mean the church of St. Canach. The fact is that Kill means a church. So we have Kildare, church of the oak grove, Kilbarry, church of St. Finbar, Killarney, the church of the sloes. The sloes are a fruit that they use for making gin, actually. Also those words that those place names that begin with Tubber, like Tubbermore. Tubber means a well, so the Tubbermore is a large well. Tubberbow is the well of the cows. All right, bearing all this in mind, we're going to see how places and people came to have the names they have. For example, Lough Brickland. Lough Brickland is in County Down, near Banbridge, and is named after a man called Brickrew. Brickrew was one of those people who liked to cause trouble. He was famous for provoking conflict and then sitting back to enjoy the fray. An agent provocateur, if ever there was one. So when he announced to Conor MacNessa that he was organising a feast and that all of the greatest warriors were invited, many of them declined, realising his plan was to provoke them into fighting. However, Brickrew assured them that he was not going to attend and that they would have the very best food and drink. In the end, they agreed and took their places in the banqueting hall. Brickrew and his wife took their seats above in the balcony to watch the proceedings. All went well until it came to the point of awarding the champion's portion. Now, this was always given to the greatest warrior, but there were three of the greatest warriors present, Leary, Connell and Cú Chulainn. Each thought they should have the champion's portion. Conor McNessa saw that things were going to get out of hand and exclaimed that they should not fall into the trap, as that was what Brickgrew had wanted. So reluctantly, the Warriors decided to share the champion's portion. Brickgrew was not at all happy with this. So the second day of the feast, Brickgrew approached the wives of the three warriors and told each of them separately that their husband was easily the most important and that they should be the first to enter the banqueting hall to indicate to the assembly their importance. Each of the wives was convinced and determined to enter the banqueting hall first. They started walking towards the banqueting hall, but when one started to quicken her steps, the others tried to overtake her and accelerated. Then they broke into a run and ran faster and faster. The warriors in the hall heard the noise of people running and thought they were about to be attacked by an enemy army, so they closed the heavy doors just before the ladies arrived. The ladies pounded on the doors and called out to their husbands. Conall and Leary tried to open the door, but Cuchulainn, hearing his wife calling out his name, lifted the whole side of the banqueting hall up, and the three women fell in onto the floor. Brickgrew and his wife, who had been enjoying the spectacle, also fell down from the balcony onto the floor. Brickgrew was furious and insisted that Cuchulainn should lower the wall he had lifted and put things back the way they were. Cuchulainn complied, but the rivalry between the three warriors had not been settled. They decided to look for help from King Aliel and Queen Maeve of Connaught and sent the three warriors there. The king and queen knew the task they had been set was not an easy one, and if they chose one, they would make an enemy of the other two. Maeve said it was obvious that Cuchulainn was the bravest, and she had a plan to solve their dilemma. She took Leary aside and told him he was a strong and excellent warrior, and to show their appreciation, he was given a bronze cup, which they said he should produce when the question of who should get the champion's portion arose. They also took Conall aside and told him of their admiration for his skills as a warrior, and he should be honoured for his expertise. To show their appreciation, he was given a silver cup, which again they told him to keep hidden until the time of deciding who should get the champion's portion. Queen Maeve then took Cuchulainn aside and told him he was the greatest warrior Ulster had ever known, and they gave him a gold cup to again produce when the moment of decision as to who should get the champion's portion. The three returned to the feast, each convinced that they would be given the champion's portion. However, when the king asked for the decision of King Aliel and Queen Maeve, Leary jumped up and said they had chosen him and they had given him a bronze cup to prove it. However, Conall then jumped up and produced his silver cup and said he was obviously the best warrior. Cuchulainn then produced his gold cup studded with jewels and said, "If there's any justice, I should get the champion's portion. This is the best token of all." Seeing that trouble was brewing, Seanchan said that they had all been tricked by Maeve and so averted again a fight from breaking out. The fact was that the problem had not really been solved. But just at that moment, the door burst open and a big giant of a man carrying an axe and a block of wood entered. He said he had heard that the warriors of Ulster were weak and cowardly, and he would challenge any of them to cut his head off if they would agree to allowing him to cut their head off. Leary saw his moment to shine and accepted the challenge. The giant put the block of wood down on the floor and rested his head on it. Leary took the axe and swung it down heavily onto the giant's neck. The head rolled off onto the floor, and Leary was delighted. But the giant stood up, walked across the room and picked up his head and carried it under his arm as he left the room, saying that he would be back the next evening to cut Leary's head off. Leary was terrified when he heard this, and the next day, when the giant returned, Leary was nowhere to be seen. The giant laughed and said he knew it. The Ulster men were as weak as women, and none of them were to be trusted to keep their word. At this, Conall accepted the challenge and thought to himself that he would make sure that the giant's head was really cut off this time. Again, the giant placed his head on the chopping block and handed the axe to Conall. Conall swung the axe with all his might and smashed it down with great force onto the giant's neck. The head jumped up into the air and rolled across the room into the corner. Conall thought he had done a good job, but to his dismay, he saw the giant pull himself up and then walk to the corner of the room, where he picked up his head, and out of the mouth came the words, "I will be back." The next day, Conall was nowhere to be seen when the giant returned and called out for him. The giant then turned to the assembly and said, "You see what I mean? These Ulstermen are weak and cowardly and lack strength. They do not keep their word." Cuchulainn, hearing these words, could not remain seated when someone cast doubt on the honour of the Ulstermen, so he said that he would offer his head to the giant. The giant placed the chopping block on the floor, and Cuchulainn knelt down and placed his head on it. Then the giant took his axe in both hands and with all his might swung the axe down onto Cuchulainn's neck, but managed to stop when it was just about 1 millimetre from touching the neck. He said, "Cuchulainn, there is no doubt you are the most valiant warrior of all Ulster, and let no man ever doubt it." With this, he left the room, and at last the problem of who should receive the champion's portion was solved, and no one ever challenged it again. Now, what is interesting is that this story dates back to the 8th century in Middle Irish, but it was evidently a great success, as there were later many imitations of the idea of someone offering his head to be cut off with the condition that he could come back and behead the other person. We see a repetition of this idea much later in the Middle English text, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. In the 14th century, this is one of the best known Arthurian stories where a similar beheading appears and is obviously copying the story of Cuchulainn and Brickru. Again, a similar beheading exchange also appears in the 12th century, a Middle French narrative called Life of Caradoc. But it only goes to show that the early Irish story was the original idea and was so popular that it spread throughout the continent.
And there you have it. Another lovely story from Patricia Traynor. Thank you, Patricia. And we will be hearing from her again in the very near future. The number one song in Ireland, the Irish number one on this very day back in 1988. It's from U2. It's a song called Desire, and it was the third track from their 1988 album Rattle and Hum. It was the group's first number one in the UK, and it also went to number one in Australia. It was their first Australian number one as well. And it won the 1988 Grammy for the Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with a Vocal. Interesting title, isn't it? Let's take a listen to the song that was number one in Ireland on this day in 1988, U2 and Desire. Yeah.
Candle burning my room. voice. She's my possession. Yeah, she's a promise in the year of election. Our sister, I can let you go. Like a piece of stealing hearts at Trevor in show. For love of money.
The number one song on this very day, the 7th of October, back in 1988, from Irish band U2, and a song that's called Desire. That is it for this particular part of the programme. Come back to me just after the break, and George will be joining us for this week's G2 Summit.
Live on air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
You are very welcome to this week's G2 Summit. We call it the G2 just for new listeners because the two G's, myself and George Lee, I'm Ger Sweeney, and George Lee, we have a chat every week about the news that was making the headlines and having people chatting in Ireland over the past 7 days or thereabouts. And you see, the politicians can have their G7s and their G9s, so this is our G2. George, hello and welcome.
You're very welcome too, Ger.
Thank you very much indeed.
Lovely to have you in the room at the top of the house.
The room at the top of the house. Is that an expression that I'm not familiar with?
No. You're in the room at the top of the house.
Oh, sorry. Oh, I see. Yes. You're at the top of the house. Okay, very good. All right. Well, listen, this week, George, we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago. The news is very slim pickings at the minute. There's a few bits and pieces happening. Brexit, which we're all fed up with talking about. And of course, the other big story this week was Storm. Or was it hurricane, or was it just a puff of wind called Lorenzo? Now, I flew out of Shannon back to Spain, and it's fabulous here, it really is, on Thursday evening as Lorenzo was about to hit. But reports from Ireland is that it wasn't as severe as people had anticipated. So tell us about it.
Yeah, Ger, first of all, I have to compliment you. You had a picture on Twitter the other night.
Fabulous.
Which was just magnificent. Above the storm, it really was. And if anybody hasn't seen it on Ger's Twitter page, I'd well recommend them to go and have a look at it.
Ger Sweeney 67, that's where you'll find it on Twitter.
Look, Lorenzo came and Lorenzo went. I think the Met Office was spot on. Apparently what happened was that it got to within about 12 miles of shore. There was 12 metre waves recorded at some of the buoys 12 miles offshore. It didn't do a whole lot of damage because I don't think it actually fully hit the shoreline. Strangely enough, talking to people from Wicklow and Dublin over the last couple of days, they seem to have been affected more by this than a lot of the places along the west coast, which is interesting. The one thing is that we are now predicting these storms a little bit further out, which I think is a very positive thing. The problem that you have in, I suppose, calling all of these storms from a Met Service point of view is familiarity breeds contempt.
That's it, yeah.
And the next time we might have a much stronger one and people say, sure, the last one was nothing and we'll plough on and see where we go. You can't take a chance with these meteorological events.
There was a story over the weekend, George, you actually brought it to my attention, and that was about the naming of the storms. And we looked at that a number of months ago, but it appears that there was some communication between Ireland and England and the Netherlands in relation to how people might or might not be able to pronounce various things. What was that about?
I thought this was a lovely story, Ger, especially considering that I have a daughter called Aveen who insists on having the father put into her name.
All right. Anywhere at all.
Anywhere at all. And you're looking for all graphic on the keyboard every time you're trying to do something. But yeah, look, a list of names was sent from the UK Met Office to the Irish and Dutch meteorologists, whatever they are.
Weather service.
To tell us to be on the telly. Showing that 18 other names were initially proposed. The proposed list also included the name Roisin, but an email from the Met Éireann on 23rd of August clarified the UK Met Office had misspelled the name.
Oh, here we go.
At least they didn't claim her as one of their own, I suppose. One point, Roisin has an acute accent. Now, did you know that that's what a father is called?
No, I didn't.
Over the over the O and the second I, and it read, it is pronounced Roisin, which means little rose. Another email on the same date from the Dutch Met Service also explained the Dutch reason for dropping a previous suggestion of Emer over concerns about how British people would react to it. Emer is an Irish girl's name, pronounced E-E-M-E-R, and we think the British population may have struggled with the pronunciation too, because of course it's spelled E-I-M-E-A-R. Yeah. So we've decided to use Elaine instead.
Oh, a Dutch solution to an Irish problem.
Absolutely. Listen, the last time they came, they caused havoc as well.
Okay, that's definitely staying in. Now, we're not going to dwell on this, but the shenanigans of Brexit, the border and the whole lot has to be referenced at some point. And, you know, maybe we should do it in the context of Bonnie Greer's comments on BBC about Ireland not owing the UK anything. That really caused some consternation on social media, didn't it?
It did, Ger, and I listened to Bonnie Greer the other evening on the radio, and she was absolutely amazed at how much this had actually caused a stir. Basically, what she said was, look, Ireland owes Britain nothing. You know, Britain has decided to pull out. Ireland is still in the EU. Lads, get over it. And by the way, if you think America is going to jump to your aid here, think again, because there's far more Ireland in America than there is Britain in America. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we turn the river in Chicago green every St. Patrick's Day. Lads, really, you know, cop on and don't be expecting Europe and Ireland to bail you out of your current problem. There's been a few succinct summations, I think, of the whole situation over the last while. This thing has got out of hand. What Boris Johnson is trying to do now is create a platform from which he can negotiate. It's classic negotiation stance, what he's done. Mm. What he's done is that his idea is that the solution is somewhere between 50% and 100% of what he wants. Mm-hmm. He's taken it to 50%, and now he's saying, lads, I'll meet you at 75.
That's it.
And look, none of that is going to work, I don't think.
The other B word that we're not really talking a whole lot about is Budget Day in Ireland is next Tuesday. I noticed two important things in this. One was that 900 million, almost a billion euro, has been set aside for a no-Brexit deal. That's the first thing. Secondly, there's very little talk about the budget. In previous years, you would start to hear about the budget maybe 3 weeks out because they'd be leaking things to kind of test the waters and see how people are reacting to it. And by the time Budget Day comes, there's no news at all, really, because it's been tried and tested. And what we have not have been up in arms about is what happens in the budget. But as well, of course, this year, there's supposed to have been a general election budget because we're going to the polls next year. So Budget Day is an important day next Tuesday.
It is, Ger. And I suppose looking at it, over the last 4 or 5 years, the budget per se, where the Minister for Finance stands up in the Dáil and gives his speech, you know, has taken less significance than it had heretofore, because most things are within a strategic plan at this point. So there's very little surprises anymore in the budget. The whole keeping one eye on Brexit has been very much to the forefront of Pascal O'Donoghue's thinking. The fact that he has also taken 500 million euros out of the rainy day fund, as it's called, that won't be going in there. So half a billion means he actually has very little money to play with this year. The only surprise that's going to come out, and this is the whole area of carbon taxes, it's probably going to be set now at 6 or 7 euros a ton, which is what it's being looked at the moment, where previously they were talking about 20 euros in the first year. So I think maybe that's with an eye to the general election. That, of course, will completely and utterly send the Green lobby into all sorts of twists and turns and stresses.
All right.
So, yeah, look, I think this is going to be pretty much a non-event of a budget. Probably get 2 cents a litre more onto our petrol and diesel. People will throw their hands up in the air for a couple of days and everyone will go back to where they were this time last week.
An Garda Síochána is planning to spend an estimated €70,000 on memorabilia for its personnel. Now, there are currently over 14,500, I think, employees within An Garda Síochána. And the service has now issued a tender for the provision of various types of high-quality memorabilia, which would be suitable for presentation to all Garda Síochána personnel, dignitaries and other recipients. Interesting story.
Yes, but a fiver a guard.
And interesting. I like, this just came out of the blue. Like, where's this coming from?
Look, I deal with guards on a community level. You know, occasionally they'd require little things that they would give out within a community setting.
Oh yeah.
Perhaps it's things like that. But also, I suppose, look, if they have a visiting member of the police force from New York or from Stockholm or wherever,
Northern Ireland,
Northern Ireland.
One of his old pals.
No, we just employ them. that you'd have something to hand them, I suppose. Yeah. And that's where this comes from. 70,000 euros a year. Look, you can make it into something or you can make it into nothing. Not major in the greater scheme of things.
It's
but
not
the opposition.
Really.
The opposition will probably jump on top.
But it is lovely when the public sees a headline like that. 70,000 being spent on pens and coins and silverware and crystal and all sorts of things. Sure, it gives us something to rattle on about, doesn't it?
Well, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what the Supermax budget out of the guards is every year for the prisoners they're holding in their cells. I mean, that's the other way of looking at this.
Now, the junior search results. I am thankfully finished with second level at this stage, but the junior search results were out a little bit later than normal. They were out on Friday, and I know that a niece of mine did extremely well, so congratulations to young Gillian. Well done to all the students, and I suppose it's an important time for them, isn't it, George? Because it shows them really, I suppose, for the first time, the direction that they may or may not be able to go in future life.
It does, Gerard, but that's where it stops and finishes as far as I'm
yeah,
concerned.
With that, yeah.
I have my own daughter in the junior cycle at the moment. Nowadays, they're into all these class-based assessments, and I think what was far more important this week was that the Minister for Education, Joseph McHugh, came out earlier on in the week and he overruled the directive that had come from the Department of Education where they had were going to get rid of history from the junior cert cycle. I think that would have been a major, major, major mistake. Mm. Thanks be to God, he saw sense and he is keeping history. If we don't have history in our curriculum, we are bound to repeat the mistakes of the past. And I think our young people need to understand where we've come from and be able to look at things in a retrospective way.
All right. A worrying story that I spotted, George, concerns. I'm all for a peaceful demonstration. Like, for instance, the climate change marches recently. But I see that environmental activists planning certain things in the coming week or so. They're planning to cause disruption over 7 days in Dublin city centre next week. And they have said that they expect to be confronted by Gardaí for their actions. Members of the Extinction Rebellion group will set up blockades and roadblocks and a campsite from midday on Monday for what is being described as a week-long festival of civil disobedience. This doesn't sound good.
Look, would they just go back to work and stop annoying people that are trying to do a day's work as well? I mean, the only ones that they're going to wind up cheesing off in all of this are the ordinary citizen of Dublin who's going around at their daily work. Look, we get it. You know, there's an environmental problem. We're trying to deal with this in the best way we possibly can. God knows we're going to have 2 cents a litre put on our diesel and our petrol during the week. What good is spraying Daniel O'Connell red going to do them? You know, what good is it, as I saw earlier on in the week, spraying a government department with red to represent blood? Certainly go out, demonstrate. We all have that right. But civil disobedience gets them nowhere. You can understand what's going on perhaps in Hong Kong or wherever it is around the world where people feel that their rights have been infringed. There's nobody's rights been infringed in this.
All right, let's move on. And a good news story from a historical perspective, I suppose, as well as for a current economic situation perspective. Harland and Wolff employees have returned to work after the sale of the closure-threatened shipyard in Belfast. There were cheers as the remaining staff walked through the gates in Belfast at 9 o'clock on Thursday morning. That's a nice story that they're back to work and that things are looking well and looking good for them.
Yeah, and I suppose for even again, we'd go back to the history yeah. side of things. Ireland and Wolf was and is, I suppose, Samson and Delilah, the two cranes on the dock in Belfast, have become part of the skyline of Belfast over many, many years, going back to the war years. The shipbuilding in Belfast is now only a shadow of where it was. All of that economic work probably goes on in the Far East. Look, it's nice that they're back to work. It's followed a 9-week campaign, which saw a worker-led round-the-clock occupation of the historic site. So it's been bought for £6 million,
that's
which
for nothing
isn't a
really,
lot
is it?
Of money,
no.
You know, by a company called Infrastrata, a London-based company that specialises in energy infrastructure projects. To the best of my knowledge, most of what's done up there now is in wind turbines and the...
All right, okay. On Post has launched 2 new stamps to mark 50 years of legendary Irish rock band Thin Lizzy. Phil Lynott's daughters, Sarah and Kathleen, his grandchildren and his ex-wife, Caroline, were also on hand to unveil the new stamps on Thursday. Nice one.
Nice one. And of course, Sarah gave her name to one of the greatest songs ever in the Irish music catalogue, as far as I'm concerned. Phil Lynott and Lizzie, Sarah, which is a great song.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Christy Moore's Liz Tuverna, sorry.
That as well, sure. Yeah. There has to be a clear input into every G2 song.
I know, I'm just thinking that might be where it happened.
On Post said, says he, moving on very quickly, that queues formed at the GPO in Dublin with fans snapping up the collector's items. One of them features a portrait of Lynott himself by artist Jim Fitzpatrick, while the other features the album artwork from Black Rose. You know, Jerry, when we look at, and I have quite a lot of them here, and I have them on display in my own little office here, it's the one thing that we're missing from downloads. The wonderful artwork that used to be on the front of album sleeves. You know, you look back at all of the classic ones over the years, The Dark Side of the Moon and Pink Floyd, and even some of the Christy Moore albums, as you would have pointed out. They were just works of art in themselves. Look, Philo broke a mold in his day, and an awful lot of rock bands now, including U2, would owe an awful lot to the breakthrough that Phil Lynott would have had. And of course, his mother, Philomena, died earlier on in the year as well. And I suppose it's lovely for the family as well to have him remembered.
It is indeed. And we always have to have an, and finally, a Fungi, the beloved dolphin in County Kerry, is officially the longest living solitary dolphin. Tell us about that, George.
Well, Jerry, whether he is or whether he isn't.
He's getting the name.
the Kerry lads aren't going to miss the trick.
No. Come here, is that the same dolphin, is it?
Well, I don't know, Jerry. I mean, you tell me. That's
right. You know me and my conspiracy theories.
Well, for years I've thought that he might be a clockwork one or something to bring in every night and they wind him up. I know in the Kerry lads it could possibly be. This is a dolphin. He's been added to the Guinness Book of World Records. He lives in Dingle and is a fully grown, middle-aged, common male bottlenose dolphin.
Wow.
He was first seen in the harbour by a local lighthouse keeper in 1983, and the speculation that he was orphaned there and that he just feels secure in the sheltered harbour.
Okay.
He interacts playfully with swimmers, divers, kayakers and surfers. I actually had my own interaction with him. I was on a boat in Dingle Bay a number of years ago, and he came up and he played alongside the boat. Really is a special experience.
Okay.
He has never been aggressive with anyone, and he spends his days swimming with local boats, carrying tourists. The average lifespan of a common bottlenose dolphin is upwards of 48 years in the wild. And he has been in Dingle Bay for 34. So I think they'll have to have a big funeral the day he dies.
Oh, listen, Fungi will never be allowed to die. Never. I'd say there's four Fungis somewhere hidden, just in case.
They have statues and that up to him, don't they? And rightly so. I mean, he really has brought an awful lot of very positive news stories and an awful lot of positive PR to the area over the years.
George, that's it for another week. Listen, George, have yourself a good week. Thanks for talking to me today, as per usual, and look forward to your company next week and chatting about whatever's in the news.
God bless, Jared. Have a good week.
And along with thanking George, can I say thank you to Ben for presenting Brendan O'Carroll to us this evening. Thank you very much to Patricia Traynor and her stories on place names, Cúchulainn, Brickrew, and many, many others. And of course, as always, thank you to our Spanish-Irish cultural correspondent and consultant, Jose Antonio Sierra. The big thank you, though, goes to you for listening in today. Thank you so much indeed for your company. I'm back in the morning at 8 o'clock, sitting in for Hannah. If you can join me here on Talk Radio Europe, then that would be brilliant. If not, I'm sure I'm on every day this week, and I'm back next Monday on Live on Era. I'm going to leave you with this song. We made reference to it in the stories when I was chatting to George about Thin Lizzy. Of course, it is Phil Lynott and that song, which is called Sarah. Until we meet again, from me, Jerry Sweeney. Bye bye now. Look after yourselves, and thanks for listening.
When you came in my life, you changed my world, my Sarah. Everything seems so right, my baby girl, my Sarah. Sarah.
Ger Sweeney presents Live on Era in association with emeraldconnection.net.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.